Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
My dad's not here right now. He's still at work. So I'm going to bless him.
Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I'm going to see if there's a clean version so then my parents and the people at my school will not get mad at me. We've got the spritzer filled with water just in case if stuff gets too fire. I'm going to set up the speaker and I'm going to listen to
Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I think this is the best
Mike Shope
feature that I've heard in a long time. I think his flow is really good on it, and I like his aggressiveness on it. And
the Bulldog
put not enough effort in it. I think overall his flow was good, but I don't like that mumble rapping. That was my review of
Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Didn't need the spritzer. Wasn't fire enough. No spritzer for you. No spritzer.
Hi, everybody. Happy Friday. Gotta be the hottest week of our lives, right?
Oh, yeah.
Records every day already today. 96.
I feel like I'm getting used to it, though.
But it's not good.
It's not good.
I don't want to get used to it.
Today I walked outside and I didn't even think about how hot it was.
Last night at about 8 maybe, it started raining.
Yep, big storm.
And we went outside like, hey, look, rain. My wife and I go outside. She goes in, she goes back in, kids, come here, rain. And the four of us were outside. We were like the cast of Pleasantville in that scene where Tobey Maguire is, it's raining and like the other young people just like don't know what that is. That's how I felt, just outside, probably a quizzical look. Have you been, Joe, somewhere like a Vegas or the desert, I mean, somewhere where it's hotter than this, like, regularly?
No, I mean, well, I went to Arizona this past November, but, and I actually didn't dress correctly. I did not have a sweatshirt with me. And, I don't know, I thought, you know, you're going to Arizona, what do I need a hoodie for? It's going to be 100 degrees, right? And I
just
got
all
there,
the time. It's always 100?
No, right, just the whole year. What is in the winter, 80? But it was more like 60 to 65, but they say 115 there. It's a dry heat. It's okay.
That's fine.
A dry 65. You want a sweatshirt with you. It's cold.
I have not been, like, I think more Vegas than Arizona. I've only been to Arizona once, but I have not been there often enough to know whether I don't mind it because of the humidity or because I'm in Las Vegas. Like, it might just be that I am, when am I outside in Las Vegas? I'm just walking the strip. So I'm leaving. Maybe I'm upset because I just lost somewhere, but I'm going somewhere else cool, you know, not like temperature cool. And so it doesn't, you know, like, oh, wow, it's hot out here. But this is, and I'm so spoiled. We all are so spoiled by how easy it is to get around this area. I mean, I walk out my door in my car 16 minutes and I'm here straight shot over Grand Island, across Grand Island, over the bridge, onto 290, off at Millersport right here, or Niagara Falls Boulevard. Millersport, if I want to play the left turn game, the telephone pole game here. So no difference in the amount of time it takes, one road. When I have to drive to Lancaster, like I did today for something, and then Lancaster to here, I mean, I feel like I am, you know, the desert. It's not that it's desolate, but it's just like I'm at every stoplight. I'm dying here. I'm thirsty. it just feels like I'm doing something really challenging, which is embarrassing. Like I know I'm not, but Lancaster or Clarence, like to me, those are faraway places that I just don't want to go there. I don't know what to do when I'm there. I know it's going to take me way too long to get to work. I mean, what are the roads? What do I want to even? I'm going to drive 10 minutes to get to the thruway. I don't know. What am I even really saying? It's just like that drive to me is annoying. I guess that's part of what I'm saying is that's annoying.
This probably isn't right, but Lancaster to me feels like the largest place on planet Earth.
There's
just
a lot of
goes forever. It's just like, I'm in Lancaster. Didn't think I was even near Lancaster, but here I am. I'm in it.
Yeah.
I should have said I've gone to. I made multiple Disney World, Florida summer trips in my lifetime. So maybe humidity is a part of it because I always remember about those trips how hot it was. And maybe that is also pulling into it that you're standing in line for an hour out in the heat and that makes it worse. But
you got to have a slushy to get you through.
Oh, yeah. You something. Need something. Yeah.
Something like that. A popsicle.
That's not
a draft.
That's not one of those turkey leg situations where you want to walk around Disney World with a turkey leg. Because when it's like 100 and you're just standing there for an hour, that's not the thing you want to be holding.
No, what is the worst line there? Like, say Magic Kingdom.
Soarin'. Oh, well, Magic Kingdom.
Soarin', you're indoors, though. At least for most of it. If you're out, if you're outdoors waiting in line for Soarin', you're looking at an hour.
Yeah.
So you don't want to be in that line. And it's shady over there.
What's the worst line in Disney World?
Any park. Any park. I feel like Hollywood is the one where you are, let's see.
Rock and Rolling Coasters is inside.
So is Toy Story. I don't know. They're pretty
haunted,
good, maybe.
Not Haunted Mansion. Tower of Terror is inside.
Haunted Mansion at Magic Kingdom is a long line sometimes. And that's outside most of it. You're right by that riverboat. Have you ever been on that riverboat?
Yeah.
You have?
Yeah.
Never been on that.
It's a good time.
What do you do on it?
You just float around.
You sit there.
You just sit there.
You like that?
Yeah. Depends if you... If maybe in between a couple of thrill rides. It's a nice little break.
Intermission. We talked about fantasy draft today because Bulldog is off this week. Disney is another one that's you and me, right?
Yeah.
We could have had a Disney draft. You and me, we get Joe Biscaglia.
We could have a Disney draft.
We could have had a Disney draft.
Disney characters, though? Disney rides?
Eric Wood.
Disney? Like, what is that?
Kevin Payne is big in Disney. Joe was big on Disney, I think. Eric Wood is big on Disney. Could have had a little round table. Disney round table.
Yep.
I mean, they are open. And it is sports because the NBA plays all its games now at Disney World.
Well, a lot of these rides in Disney, it's like the back half is outside. And then the front half, it's like... You're waiting to get to that half hour mark. It's like, all right, I'm a half hour away from the ride. Now I'm indoors. Like that's really where you want to make it. It's like I don't even care about the ride. At some points, like I've been waiting in line for 45 minutes. I just want to make it to the part of the line where I am inside,
right?
And then I'm okay
because everything's going to be air conditioned right, with the doors open.
So I think that's a lot of rides.
The hottest Disney, like if I'm closing my eyes, like where am I the hottest at Disney World?
It's
the middle.
The Runaway Train.
You go across or through the castle.
Yep.
And you're in the middle by the big carousel and the Sword and the Stone. And left toward Haunted Mansion and, well, was Splash Mountain. Like toward that way, that area is super congested. Mm-hmm. You go past It's a Small World.
Yep.
And then down that hill.
Yeah.
It's super crowded there. Everybody's in line for Peter Pan and Small World.
That pond is there, yeah.
And that is like toward Liberty Square. That is hot. I mean, in temperature hot.
Yeah.
And the other way, too, going toward Winnie the Pooh on the right.
Yep.
That way. And Mine Train on the left.
Mine Train. That's a bad one.
That's a bad one. That's a good ride.
That's a good ride, but that's a hot line.
That's my peak. That's my max, by the way, Mine Train.
Max, in terms of what?
In terms of rideness.
Like thrill ridey?
Yep.
Like
that's it.
Oh, so you're not doing like the Tower of Terror.
No.
You're not doing
No.
Those are the best ones.
No, am I not?
Well, if we're drafting
I don't want any of that.
I don't want any
roller coaster. Goofy's Barnstormer, okay.
Yeah, see, I don't have to worry about you.
No, you don't. You're right.
I will get Rock and Roller
Coaster. I'll get all the food.
I'll get whatever I want whenever I want.
I will get all the food. I will get Star Tours. That's kind of ridey. Star Tours.
Star Tours. I'll take Mission Space though. That's fine.
No interest. Mine Train, I did Thunder Mountain. My
Thunder
first
Mountain,
time there.
Thunder
and
Mountain
I'm like,
is a bad line. It's all outside.
Yeah. I did Thunder Mountain, and I thought that wasn't terrible. I mean, I respect it. It's like a movie that everybody says is good, but you just can't get into it. Like, all right, it can be good. I'm not saying it's not good. It's just I didn't really like it. Mm-hmm. Thunder Mountain, it's good, but I never want to do it again.
You feel like you have to do it just because you have to do it. Like, there's a respect level there. It's a classic movie that you might not be enjoying, but you've got to finish it just because you have to say that you've seen this movie.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So no Everest either?
No.
Oh, Everest is...
It's my wife and my son.
Best.
And my daughter doesn't want to do any of that stuff either, so we go play the games, like the whack-a-mole, and you shoot the water at the horse or whatever.
Yeah, no.
Try to win prizes. That's she and I. She and I are
there.
That's
the carnival, but...
The carnival.
But,
and you,
but
get,
you can get that anywhere. You don't have to go to Disney World for that. You could get that at the fair.
I mean, I don't know. Sure. So?
So when I'm going to Disney World, I don't want anything to do with something that I can get anywhere. If I can do something at the fair, I don't want to be doing it at Disney World. Unless it's, you know, drinking beer in Epcot. That one I'll make an exception.
Yeah, that's the best. I mean, walking around over there.
That's
the
a
best.
Day. That should be it. That's just a whole day.
Sure.
On my perfect Disney vacation.
Yeah. It's at least one day on my perfect vacation. It's at least one day. Yes. Well, all right, Disney. Talking about the Heat, I guess that's how that happened. Pretty big day in hockey with that vote, and that's going to be at 4? So, is it at 4 when they vote, or is it at 4 when we find out what happened?
4 is when the Board of Governors vote, and then the players' vote should be done by 6. So from what I've read, it will not be likely that we know until late tonight or at some point in the evening.
Okay. Well, I guess there's more than a little bit riding on it.
It sounds like the season is riding on it.
It sounds like maybe a few seasons are riding on it even. Like this season is. Yeah, that's what it's being said is true, is that if the players – it's not expected, I suppose, that the owners would vote it down because – it's like their idea or the commissioner's, it's the league's proposal. So I wouldn't expect the owners to be up in opposition, but the players, maybe. And if they go along, we'll have our continuation of this season, such as it is. And then whatever from there for 5 more years without the threat of another work stoppage. And if they don't approve it, then this year's thing is just canceled, right? And I don't know. They have a CBA through next year, I believe. Maybe one more, but at least one more year. And after that, maybe you would assume a work stoppage. But I don't really know. Like, I don't have a side in it. I don't have a position on whether this thing should be approved. I don't know it like that. I just would assume that there's a lot less money in this deal than there is usually, or than there was in the last deal, in different ways and forms, that just because the revenue would have to be a lot less. I mean, I would just think so. Common sense, it's less everywhere. So we'll see what happens. Keep it tuned to WGR, and we'll give you the updates on the news on that. I was thinking about crowds again, because right now, like every day in sports news is, it's the Jaguars today, I guess, that they're going to try for 25% capacity. That's about what we've had, talking about other teams, or a little more, maybe. And yesterday I was talking about this with like the Bills in mind. I want to talk about this with Sal. I meant to yesterday with Sal, but we talked about other things. I'm sure a lot of you have thought about it. Like the idea of going to a game, what does going to a game, how appealing is it? What does it seem like if you know it's 20% capacity and you have to wear a mask the whole time? Like, would that sound like fun? Would you want to do that, you know? And so I brought this up yesterday, and then Joe talked and mentioned tailgating. I think it was you that said that. You're like, the tailgating... Yep. And of course, the tailgating, that's correct. And that's part of it. Like, if there are restrictions on that, then that's another factor that fans would consider. And there would have to be some kind of difference in the tailgating scene. But if I can just keep it to the crowd in the stadium itself, And it doesn't have to be, for this point, it doesn't have to be a football game. It can be any sport. Or, you know, a concert or any other situation where you're in a large group of people, and that feeling you get, however you want to describe it, I'm not going to be the best person to describe it, I think, because I tend to think other people get more of a rush from it than I do. But there is a rush from, like, a great sports crowd. What do you need? You need, you know, a full house is one thing that you tend to need, or close to it. Like, I've been to Bills games in the 90s when the top corners of the upper deck were empty, and you don't even notice, like, when you're cheering and listening to the crowd. Like, you don't notice that difference. Or even a Sabres game for that, necessarily. But it can't be 25% of capacity. Who's ever even been to a pro game? Like, not in the minors. Who's ever been to a major league sporting event where, like, half the seats or more were empty? I mean, that doesn't happen.
Bill's fourth preseason game.
Sure, okay. Maybe. You know, maybe.
No, it's probably more than half, actually.
I go to the start. I stay at that first preseason game for at least a quarter because I love it. I love to go up to the upper deck and look at the field and just sort of watch a few plays and, you know, just breathe the air. I love it up there. Like a summer evening, I don't want to be up there in November, but I love being up there when it's sort of spread out. And, you know, if that's ironic because that's a situation where if it were really crowded, I wouldn't bother. But, you know, you can get your own row on a night like that. Anyway, that's not the point. The point is, I think a real sports fan knows and loves that energy, that feeling you get in a great crowd. You need, I started to say, you need, you know, a lot of people. You need an important game. I need an important game. It can't just be any game. I'm not going to be, I think you know this if you listen, I'm not going to be fired up for those December Bills games that are meaningless. Like, I don't care at all. I'd rather they lose sometimes. Just, you know, because I don't want to deal with how great it was, listening to how important the win was or something. Like, just stop. But, you know, that's not what I mean. But those playoff years, interesting that last year it was a very good season, very good home season, but those games late in the season that were really big games were usually road games. You had Baltimore. Baltimore was a home game that was important. The Bills lose that game, but the win in Dallas, the win in Pittsburgh, most of all, like, prime time for Pittsburgh, Thanksgiving for Dallas. At home, that would even be on another level. Still, 90s, I guess, is when this was consistently the case, and those games where you're just surrounded close together by the fans, and you're all with each other, and the game means a lot. You're nervous. The crowd is so much a part of that equation. Think about a game like that you went to, and you can relate to this point, and it's Sabres too. I mean, you went to a game that was important and great, and the crowd was the best, and you remember details. And then think about a game on the same kind of level that you watch from home. And some people prefer that. Like Bulldog sometimes has said over the years, I kind of need to be in my bunker for these games because I get too nervous or don't want to have certain interactions. Fine. The feeling of being there, if you're sort of open to it, you know, sort of into it, is so much a part of that equation. And I was thinking about, I tried to make a list of sports crowds I've been to that were really great. Just like the most outstanding, the most memorable crowds I was in. And I've been to sports in a lot of places. Like, I have been to a lot of baseball stadiums. I've been to a lot of, you know, not a lot, not as many as others, but like hockey, football, college sports too, in different areas. And it really did, as I thought about those peak crowd experiences, they're pretty much all here. They are the Bills in the late 80s, early 90s, naturally. I'm also like the right age for it. I'm a high school student and a college student. I'm young and I'm ready for all that, you know, that action and that energy. I want it at 18 years old more than I do at 48. And 88, the 88 season, which was the first really good Bills season with Kelly and Thurman and all those new guys. First playoff team in 7 years at that time. And they just sort of ran through that season. And there are many great... I can put myself in some of those crowds. I went to that Jet game when the Bills clinched the AFC East in overtime and the fans rushed the field. I have the field goal net. I have a big piece of the field goal net that I just ripped away from other people who were all wrestling for it on the field at night after that game. Then in the 90s with the playoffs and everything, I didn't go to all those games, but some of them, you just know. And this can be recent too. I mean, the last few years, there have been some great days out there. You just know. It's more than that, it's the 06 Sabres. The 06 Sabres in those crowds. Getting to know the people around you. And the nervousness between periods, before the overtime of some of those games. My friend at that time, Brian, who sat in front of us, he would stand up. So the second period would end, whether it's whatever game, Philadelphia, Ottawa, Carolina. The second period would end and maybe the game was tied or close. And I didn't know him well. I never knew him from anywhere else but in the arena. And he would stand up, kind of put his hands in his pockets, just like, you know, you just went through something watching that game, watching that period. And then we would stand up and chat for a few minutes about it. You know, how do you feel? What do you think? That kind of thing. That comes from, there's so many different examples of it. That comes from that specific kind of atmosphere, that specific place. The crowd at the stadium, the crowd at the arena. And we are looking at a season without that. Whether it's either going to be nothing or it's going to be something that doesn't compare, you know. It's the person you'll be talking to at the end of the second period, or I'm thinking more about football now, like at halftime, is the person you were at the game with, that you're there with. It's not the other people where that energy comes from, you know, like that sort of interaction. Going out into the concourse after the second period of a close playoff game and just like that sound and the talking and the interaction between all the different people, and then maybe a chant arises and all of that in that very tight space. I mean, every sports fan that goes to games and thought about it at all is sort of at least scratched the surface thinking about what that will be like, what it would be like to go to games without that. But to really think about it, I feel like a lot would be missing. A lot would be missing without that. I still want them to play, of course, and if I had tickets to Bills games, I might still want to go. I don't know. We'll see what it comes to when the time comes. But I think I would know by now that it will not be anything like what I love about it, right? If you're not, I said this yesterday, I'm sorry. If you're sort of not there for being able to read the coverages so that when you leave the stadium, you can know what coverage the team was on certain plays, like how many people who go to games can even do that? Most people are there for the energy and the camaraderie and the whatever else that is, you know, the shared experience. I think we're looking at a season where that will not be available to us. And, you know, it's just another sad thing about all this. But it really is, I just was thinking, it really is a big piece. We'll get to Brian Koziol and Sal Capaccio, and I want to talk about this with both guys at least a little bit. Different things with Brian, golf mostly, tee to green tomorrow morning, Tiger next week, a couple of little golf, like playing golf points I want to bring up with Brian, you know, playing here in the area. I've done a little bit of it recently, so we'll do a little bit of that too. And with Sal, we'll talk NFL and also like what we're looking at crowd-wise, what that piece means to him, you know, that element going to games. He's on the field now for games, but certainly like a lot of us has plenty of experience, you know, in crowds, of course. So we'll have a conversation about that and more We want Fantasy Friday. Joe, we got to do a little bit of fantasy today. We've got 4 hours. It shouldn't be too hard to fit some in. 803-0550 is the number. Bulldog is off today. This is Mike Shope on WGR.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.
Gotta tell you, I don't see much social distancing on this episode of Judge Mathis, Joe. I don't see any masks. I don't see any spacing here.
Not even like, isn't there normally, you got the judge up at the top, you've got the two benches, the plaintiff and the defendant?
That's the catch. You're right. No,
there's already social distancing.
It's built in social distancing in a courtroom. That's right. You can't get any closer than that. But, all right, well, that's that, I guess.
That show still going, by the way? It's all the same old tired judges, I feel like. Where are these new? Where's the new blood?
Where's the new wave of TV judges?
The new wave of TV judges. We're still waiting on it.
You would have thought the likes of Judge Mathis would have brought on a wave of new TV judges. But they can't get rid of these old TV judges.
Judge Judy still going, I think. Judge Mathis.
Judge Joe Brown.
Judge Joe Brown, maybe? Is he still going?
Judge Draft.
A judge draft.
They can't, you know, the restaurants now, they're telling you, you can't stay at your table for more than like however long, 2 hours or what is the number usually? Like they're kicking you out.
Hour and a half.
You get an hour and a half. That's what we needed here for these TV judges. We need to put a term limits on it.
Yeah, there's no term limits on TV judges.
They don't have any term limits.
That'd be something.
I guess. Joining us now on the Western Hotline, Brian Koziol, host of Tee to Green, Sabres host as well in the station, and good golfer. Brian, how did you do? Were you out there yesterday in the thing Sal was a part of?
I was. There was 24 insane people playing golf in 98-degree heat.
Too hot, right? Come on.
It was hot. It really was. I mean, I'll golf in just about anything, and I've golfed in flurries too, but it might have been worse yesterday. It was really, really, really hot, and
you know what else, Brian? There's no water coolers.
I know. You know, everything, even just like there's not like the cart girl driving around to get you the drinks or anything like that. Everything that you buy, if you don't chug it, or if you have anything, like it gets warm within 10 minutes, five minutes. So you got to douse it down quick. So we had a wonderful time. And Josh Reed from Channel 4 set that all up. And Sal helped out too. So I had a wonderful time. And I should say I probably would rather be golfing than laying on my couch. But it was definitely very warm yesterday. But Glen Oak was in phenomenal shape. And we had a really good time.
I never realized before my game there a couple of weeks ago how much I missed the water coolers. But, you know, you're right. Like you said it all. I bought two beers at the turn that day, and I drank one as fast as I could, which, of course, also dehydrates you. And then the second one was just warm by the time I was done with the first one. There's no place to get water. You know, you got to, you know.
Well,
you have to be an adult about it. Be prepared, actually, and not just be like me and go out there and be lazy and then buy beer and feel worse.
What you need to have, Mike, when you're playing Glen Oak is a connection, which Jeremy and I, who were playing in the same group, we actually had. You might know this guy, Alan Davis, who happens to be the boss of all of us here at WGR.
Yep.
Lives on the 17th tee.
That's nice.
He delivered four ice-cold waters from his home to our foursome, and it was like the fuel we needed to finish those last two holes.
That is great to have. It's too late, though. 17. I'm like almost done now. I don't need this now. I needed this an hour ago. Now my round is shot. I'm exhausted. Anyway, hey, one more thing about like playing golf right now. So I was out there with Alan and Jeremy and Sal. We had a game 2 or 3 weeks ago, and somebody hit a ball. Definitely wasn't me, by the way. Somebody hit a ball probably out of bounds left on a hole, a tee shot. And like this has always been one of my things about golf. Like when I played a lot, like I mean anybody could know this. I'm sure you do. If the ball's out of bounds, you got to re-tee. But Sal said that they changed that.
Yes.
So that now you can go up to where you think the ball crossed into out of bounds and then drop and just add another stroke, right? So you'd be hitting four from there if you hit your tee ball out of bounds on that hole, right?
Yeah, when the USGA set up the new rules, which this actually started last year, which you know the biggest one that we talked about last year was about the option of keeping the pin in, which now of course with COVID now we all are putting with the pin in. But yes, so if you hit a ball out of bounds, you can do what you said. You have one option is to re-tee, hitting your third, like has always been, or you can go to where you think it went in. Drop it actually into the fairway there on the edge of the fairway and count that, and then you'd be hitting four from there. So it's essentially like you re-teed. So if you've hit a fairly good tee shot in terms of its distance, you might want to take advantage of that new rule. If you just like snap hooked one and it goes out of bounds like, you know, 50 yards, well, then you probably want to re-tee because then your next one from shot four would likely be better anyway. But if you hit a decent one and it just kind of kicked, and then it rolled out of bounds, and you're like, hey, that was pretty good, even though it, you know, got on the other side of the stakes. You have that option now. You can actually place it in the on the edge of the fairway where it went in, and then you would be hitting your fourth from there. And they did that a lot for pace of play reasons.
The last time I played was last Friday, last hole, again, like 100 degrees out, and I hit a great 4-iron from the sand. Second shot, it's like a long par 5. Second shot in the sand, just pured it. But I didn't really know where I was going. And as I get closer to where I think the ball will be, the hazard just sort of cuts in front of me, and I'm probably in the hazard. So I'm so tired at this point. And I just figure, like, I hit it this far. The ball has to be in the hazard. And it was kind of a big group, so some of the guys we were playing with were up on the green, like just watching us, waiting for us to come in. So I just take a ball. I mean, I'm not even really keeping score. I take a ball out of my bag and I'm like holding it, I don't know, around maybe my thighs, that level, and just drop it and play in. And one of the guys I meet at the end of the round, he says, oh, I'm going to call your show. Why? Because you're supposed to drop the ball, you know, at your shoulder, not at your thigh. Like, I saw how you did that, and that was not legal. I said, well, listen, let me save you the trouble. I did it, so I'll be sure to bring it up. Like, you don't have to call in and bring it up. I'll be sure to bring it up. So that, now there I did. I brought it up.
Wait.
Illegal
so
drop.
I think you're right, Mike. The another one of those new rules is now you drop it at around knee height. It's
okay,
not up at the shoulder anymore. So you actually are correct here. So I hope
lucky
this
break.
Person I hope this person's listening. You're wrong, Mr. Whoever was calling you out. The players actually didn't like it because they thought it made them look kind of unathletic looking. They're actually supposed to drop it at around knee height. It's kind of like an awkward kind of bend down to drop. Think about bending to that you have the ball at about knee height, and then you drop it from there. That's where you're supposed to drop it now.
He had a plan for calling in and reporting me. I'm pretty sure he's not a listener because he thought that would actually, you know, come to fruition. Brian Koziel with us here on the Western Hotline. All right, to the pros, Brian. Before we get into a couple of names, where are we at with the tour and the testing, and how is that going? I know we had a few players test positive. It seemed for a minute, maybe 2 weeks ago, like events could have been in peril. Are we through that? Did the tour successfully withstand whatever that might have been?
I think so, and I think you're right. Yeah, 2 weeks ago, the tournament in Connecticut, when they had five people involved test positive, and they, the press, and then the commissioner was going to hold a press conference. I know everybody was like, "Uh-oh, what's going to happen here?" And it ended up, it was a couple of caddies and a couple players did it just for precautionary reasons. But it seems as though they've gotten through it. They've made a couple of subtle changes in order to kind of help this. So if someone takes, if someone feels at all like maybe they have symptoms, they take a test. And before the results come out, they don't have to withdraw. They let them play as a solo player. So that's been something that they've kind of been implementing. Jason Day actually did that last week for one of the rounds. They had him play by himself until he got the results of his test. Three players this week are coming back from positive tests. Mm-hmm. And according to CDC guidelines, they've done what they need to do in terms of what they would consider to be not contagious anymore. So even though necessarily they haven't cleared the full protocol of getting full, you know, back-to-back negative tests, the three of them were actually paired, a group together, and they were playing this week because they hit whatever the CDC workforce guidelines are now for coming back to work. They have now been labeled as non-contagious, I guess, is how it was ruled. So I think they're kind of tinkering with it here week by week, finding maybe more creative ways to allow as many people to play as possible. So I think you're right. I think if there was kind of a breaking point there, it looks as though maybe that they've gotten over the hurdle and now they're back on the good side at least. You know, obviously at any week and maybe you could have an outbreak mm-hmm. or something like that. But I think for now, I think the PGA Tour feels better than maybe it did 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, that's kind of the feeling I had. So you said the three guys who tested positive and have returned are playing together.
Yes.
Is that 100% practical, or is that a little bit of practical plus, you know, not shade, but kind of some cleverness? Like,
yeah,
maybe it's just fine. Maybe it's good. I don't think there's anything bad about it. It's just kind of interesting that they would do that. I wonder what the extent of the thinking was to put those guys on the same group.
Yeah, I believe it's Nick Watney, who was actually the first golfer that tested positive. Dylan Fratelli and Dennis McCarthy, I think those three. I would guess the biggest part of that is the comfort of other players and caddies. Hey, look, these three guys tested positive, but they've hit the 10-day window of non-symptoms, and according to the CDC guidelines, they can return to work. Well, obviously, work for them is golf, so we're going to put those three together, and this way, if you're another player or another caddy, you're maybe not put in that uncomfortable position of having to be grouped with them. So I guess that was kind of a creative way that they did it, and now, if one of them makes the cut this weekend, I wonder how they'll, you know, what will they have to maybe play with somebody else? So I don't know if that obviously hasn't panned out yet here, as we're still in the middle of the second round.
What do you think of Bryson DeChambeau? Is he just about the hottest thing out there right now? And is he somebody that people who don't just, you know, really consider themselves big golf fans will know about, will find interesting? Can he transcend?
I think he's definitely the buzz of the tour right now. And, I mean, this is his first week that he's actually not playing since the return to play after play was suspended due to coronavirus. He definitely, people have a strong opinion about him, but I think he's got some likable characteristics. He's also got some non-likable characteristics. First of all, he originally came on. The first thing that was notable about him that you and I talked about was his kind of scientific approach to the game with all the clubs being the same length. Then he kind of got nicknamed and monikered the mad scientist, which led to a lot of fellow player criticism because he took forever to play. Sometimes he was standing over putts for over 2 minutes. So I know Brooks Koepka was very vocal about saying, like, dude, this guy's got to get going. Like, you know, we don't have all day sort of thing. So there were some definite pushback there too. Even last week, got after a camera guy for saying that he was ruining his brand because he kept the camera on him after he hit a bad shot and was kind of being mouthy and moody out on the course. But then, now, of course, people are drawn to him because he's bulked up. because people are hearing about his diet and how he's hitting drives of 350 and 60 yards. And I mean, how about last week? He's got a two-shot lead going into the last hole with a creek running up the left side. And, you know, this is exactly probably the opposite of what every commentator would say, because every commentator would say, oh, play it conservative, hit an iron. He takes out a driver and hits it 367 yards, and it's close to the hazard, hits it to 5 feet and birdies, and then, you know, obviously easily wins. So
then he ripped his shirt off.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, he's so big, and he's so bulky. It's like it's not kind of the trend of sports. I feel like even in other sports right now, we're seeing more of the like the toned athlete, but not the bulky athlete. Like Gary Woodland has lost a ton of weight. Tiger Woods is even kind of trimmed up, even though he's strong. Rory McIlroy the same way. But I think you see it in the NBA. Like, it's not the big 7 foot centers that's doing it anymore. It's the trimmed down, in shape player that's kind of running things. Look at even the NFL. The linemen, you don't have the big 370 pound guy in football that's a must have anymore across the board of your line. Like, these are now more of the younger, the quicker, more toned guys that can move quicker amongst the line that are the ones that are now more popular in the league. So I think kind of sports is trending that way, so it's surprising that DeChambeau's doing this. But the one stat that says is the most important to scoring is proximity to the hole.
Distance.
And with DeChambeau's length right now being the number one length driver on tour, he's obviously scoring quite well. I mean, he's had 8 consecutive top tens. I mean, that's like Tiger-like numbers.
That's great.
Obviously, it's working no matter where he has to hit his ball out of, even if he's not accurate. But the surprising thing is that he's been really accurate, even though he's been hitting it so far. I know, just, you know, speaking with Jeff Mitas from our Tee to Green show, the pro that's on our show, he said, you know, the one thing that concerns him is that his swing is so, violence kind of the word we've been using, but is that it puts a lot of stress on ligaments and your back and your knees. And, you know, Jason Day kind of had a hard swing like that, and he got injured. Tiger Woods for a while there when he switched swings had that. He got injured, so he's nervous about injury. But he said the reason you're working out is to kind of have your body adjust to this. So we'll see if he can keep it up long term, but it's clearly working right now.
Better streak, 8 straight top 10s or 8 straight days in the 90s. Although, actually, in golf, I have had 8 straight in the 90s. I'm sure of it. I know I have had that streak. I'd say the top 10s is better because, you know, if it's in the 90s temperature today, there's a pretty good chance it was yesterday or will be tomorrow. So you'd expect a little bit of a streak. Brian Koziol with us. Tiger Woods is going to play next week. And it's his first tournament, right?
Yep. He played in that exhibition, of course, with Phil and Brady and Peyton, but he hadn't played since February back in Riviera, so this will be his first tournament back. We thought the Memorial, Jack Nicklaus's tournament that he always plays in, he's a 5-time champion, it seemed like a spot that he would settle into. So, yes, he'll be playing there next week at a course that he's familiar with, he's had a ton of success with. I thought he looked great in that exhibition match. I know, you know, over a 4-day period, it's more of a grind than just an 18-hole exhibition match on a course that he's familiar with. But I think this is the time that, you know, we've been looking forward to seeing him. A lot of the big names have been playing in a lot of these events. I think that we've seen more maybe than what I had expected.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously Tiger being the biggest name that draws people to watch, he'll be back there next week in a spot where I got to think that he'll be at least expecting to compete because he's had such great success in this tournament so many years in the past.
You and I are in Sneaky Joe's Golf League, and there's a certain feeling of frustration that is pretty serious when a guy you just can't believe gets picked right in front of you in a draft, kills it, and it ends up being like a great pick. Whatever sport, of course, like that time where you got sniped, as they say, and like you just can't even, you don't see it coming. There are times when you're hoping to get a guy, and there are times where you're just assuming. And I wrongly, in this draft, assumed, as I was one pick away, that I would get Morikawa. And there was a guy who I don't know who drafted guys like way different from the way I was doing it, and like just there was just no way this was going to happen, and it did. And here Morikawa has been good. He was second to I guess Berger earlier in the restart, and he's ahead by six today through two rounds. So this guy's legit.
He's a good player, and one of the things I know that probably you and I both looked at when we were drafting is how many events do these guys play in? Because unlike, you know, the NFL where the guy plays every week, I mean, sometimes these players are going to play more often than not. That's an advantage to have in a league like ours where there isn't a lineup. Everybody's just in. Morikawa, a younger guy coming out of Cal, just graduated, I think, last year. He's had a really good year and a half so far on the tour, and he's given himself a chance to win. You're right, the week that I think, and I think you, by the way, here we go, I think you have Berger on your team. The
yes.
Week Berger, the week Berger won, that was the week he beat Morikawa in a playoff.
Right, right. Second.
Yeah, so, yeah, Morikawa was good. It's, when we were doing the draft, too, I mean, there's so many players that I was thinking going in that I wanted, and then when I realized I was drafting at the end, it like it shuts the whole valve of players off, and I'm sure that's the way it is in all fantasy drafts. Like, you going in, you're like, oh, if I'm drafting 9th out of 10th, well, in a snake draft, there's a whole bunch of players that obviously come off the board you know you have no chance at. Then there's a whole bunch of players that probably you're like, well, it's too early to take
right.
at either 9 or on the wrap coming around. So, you know, a guy like Morikawa, I would have loved to have taken, but I don't know if I was going to ready to take him at pick 9 or pick 12.
Right.
So, and then it's like, well, I know I'm not getting him. He's, if I don't take him at 12, that's it. He's not coming all the way back to me late in round 3. So it, and that works, I'm sure, in all fantasy sports. But
that's
yeah,
right.
that was a good pick, Morikawa. I got DeChambeau at that wrap pick for me, which has been carrying my team.
Pretty
obviously.
Good.
He's been great.
I know I can trust you to know the stats on him. You already proved that you do know them. So, like I do with my guys. Very good. Nice to talk to you, Brian, as always.
Thank you. And one more note, if golf note for those that didn't see it yesterday, they officially announced that the Ryder Cup
yep.
will be postponed to 2021. The players wanted it. The captains wanted it because they want fans. They said that's what makes the Ryder Cup so special. So even though they could have held it, they said that's the one golf event that they're like, you have to have fans for. So they've officially postponed it yesterday.
Back to odd number years like it was before 9/11.
Correct, which was the year that they didn't play it. Yep. So the next Ryder Cup will be next year, Whistling Straits, Wisconsin. Then 2023, it goes back to Europe. And then if anybody wants to go to a Ryder Cup, maybe this is a good opportunity. 2025, Bethpage State
New
Park
York.
On yep. Long Island. Yep.
Very cool. Thanks, Brian.
Thanks, guys. Have a good weekend.
You too. Tee to green tomorrow morning at 7 on WGR. Interesting point he makes about the wheel. Drafting on the wheel in fantasy. I mean, I am in squarely in football mode. I'm not thinking about golf drafts or anything else. And in at least this year in football, I like it on the wheel. I like drafting last. But he's right. I mean, what he said is you're either going to not get a certain group of players or you're going to have to reach for them. Because he's right about that. And you put it like that, it sounds disadvantageous, but is it? I saw a study in fantasy football about how the winning, at least in one tournament, one group of leagues, the winning draft position, most often winning draft position, was not at the top of the first round. It was toward the bottom. Might have been 11 out of, you know, in a 12-team league. So you shouldn't really think you're disadvantaged. Of course, in our drafts, we do third round reversal. It's a staple. It's become a signature element of our drafts. I think Brian might have liked it in our golf draft. Did we do that in our golf draft?
We did not.
No third round flip?
Nope.
Okay.
This dynasty startup I'm doing, we're talking about that. But since we split up the veteran in the rookie draft, I think there shouldn't be a third round flip because whoever picks last is probably going to pick or would probably pick first in the rookie draft.
That's how you'll do it? That's how you'll set it up?
I think if I'm picking 12, would I rather have the first pick of the third round, or would I rather have the first overall pick in the rookie draft? I think I'd rather have the
rookie.
The rookie pick.
Yep.
Who's pick one of the third round?
In veterans?
Yeah.
Like, you take the rookies, you have all the, it's like a regular redraft league without rookies?
It's a dynasty league, but yes. But the only rookie that would go first three rounds anyway maybe is Edwards-Hilaire.
Unless it's Superflex.
It is Superflex.
Then maybe, probably not.
So maybe it's close. Well, you have to account for, you're not just getting a third round pick outright. It's the difference between the first pick and the third round and the last pick.
Do you have a problem being on the wheel? In February Fix, you've been on the wheel a couple times and won.
I've first and second are my two finishes in February Fix.
That does have third round flip.
And it does. So, no, I don't have a problem with it. I think my preferred pick is generally in the first couple. It doesn't have to be first, but like first four picks usually. But I don't like being in the middle. So it's not my favorite, but it's not my least favorite.
I am 109, ninth pick in Scott Fishbowl. And as the draft was getting going, I realized I really like this spot. I'm very happy with my options in the ninth, with the ninth pick and then the fourth pick of the second round. Then we had Mike Dempsey on Tuesday for Football Diehards, and I said, do you have a favorite draft position? And he said, where I don't want to be is 7, 8, 9. That's and this guy's drafting way more often than I am. And he's, I don't want to be at 7, 8, 9. I really do. I'm happy. Scott Fish asked everybody, or like the analysts in the Scott Fish Bowl, he said, tell me what your preference is for a draft position. And I just told him I didn't have one. So ninth is what I got, and I kind of like it. I feel like there's a certain pressure at the top to pick. The picks are like made for you. It has to be McCaffrey. It has to be Barkley. Then it has to be Elliott, especially the top two. And, you know, that's great, but I don't want to live like that.
You don't want it to be easy.
I just don't want to live like that. I want to use my skills and my opinions to make my team the way I want it. And it can be fine at the top. And his point was, you go McCaffrey, Lamar Jackson, 1-1, 2-12, and you're off to a pretty good start. And that's true. But I just want to have, I want to be at 9, 8, 9, 10. I want to be in there with some real choices. It's very close between 6 or 8 guys once you get there. I mean, when you get to 10, there are a half dozen guys you can go with that are probably available that are all pretty even. We'll run through this later. Let's play this out later. We won't make Sal wait any longer. He's coming up after the update. Sal Capaccio. Bulldog is off today. Mike Shope here with Sneaky Joe on WGR.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.